Churches using AI always elicits a response, especially from our audience. And we're getting more and more feedback that makes us think that churches are a little bit cautious and maybe even too cautious about using AI. In this conversation, we're going to unpack that and a few other questions. Let's do this. You're listening to the Reach Right podcast, the show dedicated to helping your church reach more people and grow. Well, hey guys, I'm Thomas.
I'm Ian.
And today we're talking about how your church can use AI and use it in a healthy way that it doesn't compromise your faith. I think that's an important conversation. We're talking about some other things also. This is one of our mailbag episodes. So you guys drop comments in on YouTube and Instagram and Facebook, and we try to answer the ones that we find the most interesting. We're getting more and more. So thank you guys to the Reach Right family for continuing to chime in on that. It should be a good conversation today, Ian.
I think so. Yeah. And I think this is still a question that a lot of ministry leaders have is, you know, how much does AI clash with, you know, faith and just obedience in our walk with Christ. Yeah. So, I think it'll be helpful. So, we got some, I would say, entertaining questions here.
Yeah.
And we love it. We love them. It's going to be fun. So yeah, Thomas, we should dig in. Want me to go with the first one here?
Yeah, do it. I think we'll just kind of get, this one's perfect to start
with. This one's a great start. This came from Green Grump 457. Love the name. ChatGPT, Green Grump says, is a Ouija board on steroid. You are foolish.
You referring to me, I think, is what he's saying. You
I are know, foolish, yeah, yeah. So. He did say on steroid.
Well, thanks, Green Grump. I appreciate your honesty on those things. But you know what, Green Grump's his sentiment is not uncommon. I'm finding we had another one that we did another video. It was about similar topics on AI and. The guy just said, his comment was just like, so just ignore the Holy Spirit and only let AI run your church. Got it. And
yeah.
That's not what we're saying. Obviously. And this is not uncommon though. I think that there is a lot of fear around AI in general. And I guess I talk to my wife too. I see this a lot. She sees me using AI for a lot of things and practical purposes, but she has a little bit more, I don't know if it's caution towards it, but just like fear of what it's going to become or what life is going to be like.
Yeah.
I get it. But there's a couple of things I think about this here, like a kind of a framework that I use for this. Like number one, I don't think there's anything we can do to stop what's happening. And that isn't to say that that obviously when people say just ignore the Holy Spirit and just use AI now, that's obviously foolish. I don't believe that. That's not what we would ever say. But the question is not whether or not the society is going to use AI. Like that question is already decided. It's been decided for a couple of years now. The question is, what role will the church have in the use of AI? And will we be a voice in what becomes of it? And will we use it to help further the spread of the gospel? I fear that this kind of thinking, and I don't want to make it too extreme for Green Grump, and I wouldn't put this on him, but it's similar to what the Amish do. There's so much danger in modern technology and conveniences that we want to totally shun all of that and focus on living the way that we did. And here we are a few hundred and some odd years later from when they made that decision, and they're totally isolated and basically irrelevant to the conversations our society has. They're more of a novelty that most people look at.
But some of them go bowling still.
Some of them bowl. Good Kingpin reference. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Some of our listeners may get that one. So
Brother Ishmael over there on Kingpin. That's good.
That's right.
So the reality is it's happening. And I would even argue that the transition with AI will be so lightning fast that it won't be 100 years till everything has changed. It'll be 5 to 10, where everything is going to be changing in this next season right here. So, you know, this video will live on. So we'll put this on here. We don't usually delete videos. So I could be totally wrong on these things. I'm not really trying to be prophetic when I talk about these things. But
yeah,
the reality we have to face as a church is that it is coming. Then secondly, as I get into like AI, I really think it's more about the framework that we use it for. And if we're using it as a tool and as a thought partner and not a thought leader, I think it becomes much, I think we can, we don't have to be as afraid of it.
Not a thought replacer. It's not, we're not going to be assimilated into to the machine.
Right? Yeah.
So, yeah.
So like I use AI, like, and I'm not even hating contrasting these two things. Doesn't even make sense to me, but I use AI very differently from the way that I relate to the Holy Spirit. So like it's not even on the same plane anymore, but what may happen at times is I will use AI to kind of further come up with ideas or prompt me more or help me with tasks, but it is a tool, just like any other tool that we use out there. And here's another reality is that everybody is already using AI. It's just, we've kind of embraced it at certain levels and we don't even really think about it. Like chances are that, well, maybe not Green Grump because he had a typo in his thing on steroid, but most of us use something like Grammarly, right? We use a tool like Grammarly. Grammarly is AI. Yeah. Like Grammarly is AI helping you with writing better sentences, getting spelling right, all those kinds of things.
Yep.
That is an AI system, and they're really leaning in more to it for helping you write better content. So like that is AI. Like we use it all the time. When you do a Google search, you are using AI. Even like the fact that my video came up for Green Grump and he watched this video, it was an AI algorithm that decided that he would probably be interested in this enough to comment on it and showed it to him. So yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I get it. It is a, for some people it is, there are some things that seem scary about it, and we could be proven that like, this is really scary. Like the transition will be hard in some ways. I do think that a lot of the people talking about job losses and that kind of stuff, a lot of that, like it does ring true for me, like that it's going to be a major societal shift and we need to be cautious with it. But I think the church's voice is too valuable to stick our heads in the sand and say, it's a Ouija board. I don't want to talk about it. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to say it's wrong. And that's it. Like that's not the right approach. Putting our heads in the sand does not lead the conversation. And I think instead we need theologians and leaders that really dig into it and are willing to talk about it and are familiar with it and can talk the talk and will actually wind up leading the conversation on these things. So that's my two cents, Ian. Am I wrong or do you have any thoughts or what do you have?
You said a lot there and I agree. And I'll just, one personal example I'll share that if maybe Green Grump, I just love the name, ends up watching this later is someone who grew up in a non-Christian home. I actually did play with a Ouija board to try to summon spirits at one point. Of course, repented of that. And the Lord came, when the Lord came into my life, we stopped a Ouija board playing, being a kid of hippies. That's what happened. But at the same time, you know, when I use ChatGPT, I'm not trying to summon spirits or ghosts. So just I'll leave it there. So,
I mean, I guess I can see that. Like, I mean, so this I didn't really like actually think about the context of this question. Like you talk about Ouija boards, like, yeah, you may have used it to summon spirits, but people use it for silly stuff a lot of times, like, does he like me, and who am I going to marry, and you'll kind of guide it to whoever you want it to.
And
I suppose if you wanted to ask ChatGPT those questions, you know, who am I going to marry, or, you know, does my crush like me, and that kind of stuff, like, it'll probably give you an answer, and it could be used like a Ouija board, and do not use it that way. It's not a good use case for ChatGPT or AI or any of those things, so... Yeah, I think that that's interesting context for that, Ian. So,
yeah, this next one's a lot different here from Mark, and this is a good question here. Mark BPPC said, "Great video. What about zero-click searches due to the prevalence of AI's overview? They seem to be killing spend in Google Ad Grant accounts right now."
Yeah, this is a really good question. Yeah. So, here, give you some context on this. So. When you do a search, now most searches will have an AI overview that it tells you like the quick answer to your question if you have kind of a question-based search. So, you know, you'll see this on a Google search. It'll be usually a paragraph or two on the top. So if Google search has been primarily the way that people spend money on Google search is by clicking on a link onto our site, then if so many people are just seeing these AI overviews and not clicking on sites, how do you get people to do that now? And so is that going to kill the ad grant? And so the answer is, if nothing changes, it will absolutely affect the ad grant. My best guess and what I'm seeing happening is that Google will probably, like, they can't kill their main cash cow, right? The way that Google makes the vast majority of their money right now is people paying for search ads. Like, that remains their main thing. They're an advertising company first. That's what they sell. We pay them money here at ReachRight. Maybe, you know, some churches, you should take advantage of the Google ad grant to do it. But they will not just get rid of that. Like, that's just not going to go away overnight, because then they lose the lion's share of their revenue as a company. So they will probably find some kind of a borderline ethical way to insert ads into those AI overviews is what I expect. And, you know, it's hard to guess how they will do that. Like, but will the grant be affected? I assume they'll probably keep the grant going and allow grant users to get into AI overviews as well. But, you know, it's really kind of tough to tell. But is it affecting things right now? Yes, in a very minuscule way, I would say. I think maybe we're seeing about 15% of our search volume drop off, like are the number of clicks that we're getting. So it requires us to be even more creative with keywords, ads, and those kinds of things in order to compensate for the different behavior of searchers on things. So it's a really good question. You know, it's hard for me to predict like what they will do. Like, you know, we operate with this as a company that manages the Google ad grant for churches and nonprofits. Like we realize that Google could say tomorrow, the grant is done. Like that doesn't exist anymore. And, you know, we have other products and ways we help ministries and things. So we'll be okay, but it would be a huge shift for us.
Of course.
And for a lot of churches, it would be a huge shift too. Cause they like hundreds of churches that we help, they see literally thousands of visitors probably every single week that are coming to their churches because of the Google ad grant. And that would make a huge difference in the number of people that are coming. So we'd have big problems if that went away overnight. So, you know, we operate right now kind of by God's grace and, you know, a little bit by Google continuing to offer this. I suspect my best guess, though, is that they have kind of shown in the past some tendency to give the grant a little bit of opportunities there. So one of the big ones right now is Performance Max accounts. And I don't want to get too into the weeds in this podcast for those that don't do the Google ad grant. But Performance Max was only eligible for paid customers. They kind of allowed grant users to start using it about a year ago now. And it's made a big difference for a lot of our grant accounts on things. So I expect they'll allow us to do some things when they figure out how they're going to be placing ads into AI overviews in the future.
Yeah, no, that's good. And another way to cap off on that is basically all these changes are keeping us on our toes, but it's good. We're always working hard to make sure our churches are getting great results with this stuff and just in general. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really just, here's the point is that it's harder than it was. Like we've been doing the grant. I've been doing the grant personally for my church for 12 years now. There was a time where you would turn it on and put in my keywords are church and churches near me. And $10,000 is spent and people come to your church. That is so far in the past now. Now it takes like our team on average, every time we do kind of a full audit of a site, we probably spend about 4 hours really digging in. And these are like pros that eat, breathe, and sleep the Google ad grant. We spend about 4 hours doing keyword research, making new ads, finding landing page terms and all those things. So it takes real work to do it now. Yep. We try and share all that with our audience and in our YouTube content. But if you're looking for some help in executing it better, we'll leave a link in the description if you want us to help manage your grant there. Yep. Our team can do that.
Good stuff. And this next one here was in response to a video we put out or post on the future of church technology. They said, so would this mean church buildings? And this is, by the way, from YouTuber YP7MF. that would this mean that church buildings are soon to be like shopping malls and are looking like abandoned buildings?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I don't think so. I think that...
Kind of comparing it to how many people shop on Amazon now or online and don't go to shopping malls, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. I'd be interested in our audience on this one here, but like this is something that I still feel pretty passionate about. People with their actual bodies getting together is still better than not consuming content online. Not forsaking
the
assembly
of the saints. Yep.
Yeah. I can't get past that as a pastor. We went through the season of COVID at our church. For context, I pastor a church in Honolulu, Hawaii, and Honolulu had the most strict lockdown laws by a mile in the entire country, where my church did not meet for 22 months. We were unable to meet together. So we saw the effects of this. Our church of about 500 or 600 people became a church of 125 people in that time. And we've since grown back quite a bit of that, but it was heartbreaking, like, to see that kind of thing happen. And it's not that we didn't try to do Zoom meetings and online church and all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But the fact is that it just is not the same. Like, and I think this is across the board. Like, you know, at Reach Right here, we're a fully remote company. So I'm in Hawaii, Ian's in Texas. We have people all over the world that are on our team, Wisconsin and Louisiana, and even overseas. We have a few team members that help us with things. So, like, we never see each other. Like, I saw Ian, I saw you last a year and a half ago almost at this point, and we got to connect and do some deep dive on strategy things and that stuff as a company. But we do this, and it is good. You know, you and I connect daily over Zoom calls and those things, and it is helpful. Like, so I'm not gonna say, but man, I miss spending time with you, like, in person, and being able to play disc golf together and, like, actually share life and share a meal. Yeah. And that's why it's so good when we get together. The exact same thing happens in churches. And I don't want to see that happen. Maybe it's just me speaking that way. And I think I'd say this too, is that church is so much more than consuming content. And that's really what happens online mostly. There are ways to build relationship, and I'm not minimizing what can happen on Zoom. Like, there have been relationships, but is it as effective today as sitting around a table with people or being there worshiping with your hands raised and singing out with 200 of your people following the Lord in the same way that you are? It isn't for me. I don't know. You speak to it too, Ian. What do you think?
No, I'm old school like you, Thomas. I don't think there's any replacing just the personal connection that happens when we gather together, when we fellowship. And absolutely. So I think most people are really like that. You know, even here, the younger generation who heavily rely upon, they're on social, and they probably put too much of their identity into that and stuff, but they still prefer connecting in person. Mm-hmm. So I just think we're created like that way. So totally agree with you on that. So
I imagine some people disagree, because I hear this all the time. Like, we have life groups in our church that are still meeting on Zoom. They started that back during COVID, got it's comfortable for them. And I'm not necessarily against it.
Yeah.
But, like, I tell you a frustration of mine, just to kind of rant for a second, is, like, mixed meetings I don't like. Like, where it's like some people are on Zoom and some people are in person. I find, for me, I'm usually, like, presenting to people that are online. Maybe it's just kind of used to doing these kinds of things, like video and podcasts. And then, you know, I speak in a different way. And I don't like that very much, kind of the mixed idea. And I think that it's not the, like, for most churches, you'll do a service for people in the room, but then it's also available to be used online. Now, in all this I'm saying, please hear, I'm not saying don't put your sermons online or something like that. Like, obviously, we're very much for that. But I just firmly believe that for the remainder of my lifetime, I believe the best discipleship will happen when saints get together and dwell together in unity. I think that's really where I land on that.
Same here, buddy.
Empty church buildings.
No, we don't want that. So,
I speak as someone who pastors a church that does not have a church building. We have a public school that we meet in, and we set up every single week.
But you're still meeting together.
We do meet together in person.
That's the point. Yeah. So Thomas, this one on a social media video we put out, at Hal Chaffee asks, what social media manager do we use?
Yeah. we use Vista Social here at Reach Right. I don't like, that's not like a recommendation necessarily, because I don't think that they're all kind of the same in my view. We just kind of have used Vista Social for a while. We liked one feature it had with analytics and things, but I think it's basically the same thing as Buffer and Hootsuite and Vista Social. And there's probably 10 other ones you can take a look at.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a best, whatever is best for your use case. I will say that like there are some things that matter. I don't necessarily recommend that every church use a social media management tool for every post, because I do see some evidence when we post things actually directly on the platform, like Instagram going in there and posting a video from Instagram. We do anecdotally tend to see better results. Now, all the social media management tools would say that's not true. They're all the same. But in my experience, I do see a difference there. So we think it's probably the right choice for most churches if you're trying to put out a lot of social content, but maybe not necessarily for every church. So I think it could be a valuable tool. We use Vista Social. Also, one little caveat I'll say this too is pay attention to where you're posting. If you're posting like at your church office, you'll probably get different results from if you're posting out of state, like if you're traveling and posting or something like that. It'll give you a different set of viewers, because all the social media channels now, they tend to look at your geolocation of where you're posting it, and they try to show your content to those people first. So pay special attention to where you're posting stuff. It's another kind of little hack in there as well.
Yeah, a lot of options out there. That's good. So this last one here from regarding a Google Grant post we put out there from at Adams340 asked us if ReachRight helps non-churches, other nonprofits with the Google Grant. Matter of fact, I had a conversation with this guy after that, which was really cool. So we're looking to help some nonprofits he works with. So the answer is yes.
The answer is yes. We have a caveat on that. We don't work with any nonprofit that comes our way.
Right.
You know, I'm a pastor. We help churches. That's our core. Yeah. We did this to help churches reach more people and grow. That's why we exist.
Yeah.
That being said, we've seen a lot of great causes come our way, and we just kept getting asked over and over, well, could you help mine? It's not a church, but we do this. We're helping orphans in overseas, or we're helping the homeless in our city. And it's ministries that are non-ministries, even if they're not faith-based, they're initiatives that we care about also. But not everybody. We don't work with anybody if it kind of aligns with biblical teachings.
Yeah. We won't work with a witchcraft coven or anything like that.
We have gotten requests before from covens, right? We've gotten that. Yeah. And we have to tactfully decline to work with covens back to our Ouija board conversation on things. So, we'd love to. It sounds like you're already talking to that gentleman, so that's awesome.
But
if you are a nonprofit, we have our team is really good, I find, at doing some of those kinds of campaigns too. We know church is best, but our team is so sharp at the Google Ad Grant that we've seen really great results. And I think on average, our nonprofit grants might even spend more than churches do. Yeah,
because they're usually reaching a broader region.
That's one of the advantages. A lot of nonprofits reach nationally or internationally.
Whereas
churches have a very local bent in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
So there's some advantages to being a non-church in this case here. So that's good.
But we can help you.
Yeah, that's it. Anything else for the mailbag, Ian?
No, we hope that this was entertaining and helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. We love doing these, and keep your comments coming, guys. Thanks for being a part of the Reach Right family, and we'll see you next time.